So much of what was proclaimed on the Arch of Titus in Rome has been reversed, but not all. When the seal was adopted, ancient Jerusalem was closed to Jews. And today, when that is, thank God, no longer the case, the destruction of the temple still has not been undone. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 205, The Emblem of the Jewish State. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. It was in early 1949 that an Israeli government-appointed committee began the process of approving a seal or emblem for the nascent state. Art historian Alec Mishori tells us what occurred. Quote, "In the process of designing the emblem, many proposals which sought to include the symbols deemed appropriate for representing the Jewish people in their reborn state were reviewed. To avoid imitating the emblems of European countries and to create a unique one, ancient visual symbols from former periods of Jewish sovereignty were sought. Much importance was attached to symbolizing the continuity and fulfillment of the Zionist dream in the emblem of Israel. Whereas the flag had been created in the diaspora by dreamers, the emblem was designed in Israel by those who had realized the dream. Because it had to incorporate elements of symbolic meaning, the designers felt a heavy sense of mission and responsibility." End quote. Interestingly, many of the most prominent proposals featured one of the central spiritual symbols of Jerusalem, the menorah. And yet, as Mishori further tells us, the various proposals put forward throughout the process would reveal a division, a divide, as to which message to emphasize above all. This would impact how the menorah would be depicted in the emblem. And the emblem as it stands today reminds us to marvel at the miracles of our age, but also to yearn for more. While the menorah was a popular choice for the emblem of the newborn state of Israel, a central question occupying the artist putting forward the proposal as well as the committee was which menorah should be utilized. For some, the obvious choice was the menorah that appears on the most famous symbol of Jewish defeat, the Arch of Titus. After all, for centuries, the Arch proclaimed the downfall of Judea, the conquest and the destruction of Jerusalem. And the most well-known aspect of the Arch was the menorah held aloft before the crowds of Rome. It therefore seemed obvious to some that the emblem should commemorate the fact that much of the devastation proclaimed by the Arch had been undone. And it was to underline this transformation that in 1949 it was eventually announced by the committee that the menorah as depicted on the arch would be central to the symbol, the emblem, of the Jewish state. Alec Mishori explains the rationale as follows, quote, "The menorah is returned from the Arch of Titus where it symbolizes defeat, humiliation, and disgrace, and is installed in a place of honor on the emblem of the state, the establishment of which is testimony to the eternity of the Jewish people," end quote. And yet, when the final form of the emblem, the symbol of the state, was announced, it was criticized by one of the most prominent religious Zionists in the country, Israeli Chief Rabbi Isaac Herzog. While Rabbi Herzog welcomed the menorah as the symbol of Jewish sovereignty, he argued that it was not the menorah as depicted on the arch that should be looked to, adopted, and remembered. For while that candelabra is indeed one of the most famous menorah images in the world, nevertheless, it also bears some strange and striking features. As I explained in an article and commentary, there is much about the original temple candelabra's configuration that we know from the Bible. It was supposed to be beaten out of solid gold, adorned with golden buttons, cups, and flowers, as well as seven branches. What is less well known, what's actually not mentioned explicitly in the Bible at all, is the makeup of the menorah's foundation, on what the candelabra stood. And though scripture has little to say on the matter, rabbinic tradition, as mentioned by the great commentator Rashi, as well as Maimonides, has insisted that it was a tripod, a simple three legs on which the menorah stood. And this has been confirmed, as many have noted, by archaeology, because all over the land of Israel in the diaspora, one can find images of the menorah etched and painted by Jews, including on Jewish catacombs in Rome, some of which date to around the time of the destruction of the temple. And almost all of them, whose bottom base is discernible, show us a menorah with the tripod of which rabbinic tradition spoke. This is true in general, but not when it comes to the most famous menorah image of all. The Arch of Titus shows a menorah brought into Rome that was mounted on a stepped pedestal. This image contradicts centuries of rabbinic tradition, as well as the way the menorah is by and large depicted in Jewish drawings and etchings. But on the other hand, we also have reason to assume that the menorah that was depicted on the arch was the one that was brought by Roman troops from Jerusalem. As we have mentioned in an earlier episode of Jerusalem 365, Flavian Rome created an edifice known as the Temple of Peace, in which many of the treasures of the temple were housed. Thus, when the arch was created, the menorah would have been on display there. Thus, it would seem that the menorah as brought into Rome did look as it does on the arch today, and yet this appearance is in profound tension with rabbinic tradition. And as I further explained in commentary, the mystery is even deeper than that because, as Professor Daniel Sperber has explained, not only is the traditional menorah supposed to stand on a tripod rather than a pedestal, but also when one studies the image of the menorah on the arch, one can discern that the menorah's pedestal is adorned with dragons or sea serpents, images that, as Professor Sperber notes, have been singled out by the Jewish sages as an image of pagan derivation. Thus, the Roman temple at Didyma in southern Turkey, built to celebrate Apollo, has been shown upon excavation to have pillars decorated with dragons that are virtually identical to those adorning the pedestal of the menorah on the arch. Why would a pedestal with non-Jewish images become part of the menorah that was in the temple? How did the temple menorah end up with a non-Jewish aesthetic when it was brought by the troops of Vespasian into Rome? Several answers have been offered by Jews confronting this question, including the possibility offered by Rabbi Herzog that the menorah broke on its way to Rome and its tripod was replaced with a pedestal. This may be the implication of Josephus' own description of the menorah, who witnessed the parade bearing the temple treasures into Rome. Josephus commented, describing the menorah, that, quote, its construction were now changed from that which we made use of, end quote. But there's another fascinating suggestion that has been offered by Professor Sperber, who suggests that while the arch does depict the menorah as it was at the time of the temple's destruction, perhaps the candelabra had already been altered when the temple still stood from its original and authentic design by someone that we know had sought to bring, in great controversy, a symbol of Roman aesthetics into the temple. This would be Herod. Josephus tells us that Herod had at one point brought a Roman eagle into the sacred sphere in Jerusalem, which inspired a tremendous protest from the Jewish residents of Jerusalem. Herod, Professor Sperber suggests, might have wanted to incorporate a Roman aesthetic into the temple. And, he further argues, that may be why there are etchings of the authentic menorah, one devoid of dragons with a clearly defined base, scrawled and drawn and inscribed on walls and floors in the Holy Land and even outside of it. Because drawing a menorah without the step pedestal would have been a form of political and spiritual graffiti or protest, an act of defiance by Jews against any intrusion of Roman culture into the temple of the Jewish God. It is for this reason that, as Mishori describes, some of the proposals submitted for the emblem of the Jewish state incorporated the traditional three-footed menorah, as well as some other Judaic symbols, such as a lulav, a palm frond, and a shofar. But in the end, the committee overseeing the choice settled on the menorah of the Arch of Titus, flanked by two olive branches. The latter added as a sign of a desire for peace, though as Mishori further notes, the pairing of a menorah with two olive branches is also a nod to imagery from the book of the prophet Zechariah. When the state seal was officially announced, Chief Rabbi Herzog, an ardent Zionist, protested the choice of menorah on both religious and archaeological grounds. After all, he argued, it is quite clear that the menorah on the arch depicted a temple vessel that had been altered. Why should not the original authentic menorah embody the light of salvation that had been made manifest in the birth of Israel? But the chief rabbi's argument was not accepted. The menorah of the Arch of Titus, with the step pedestal, surrounded by olive branches, became the emblem of the Jewish state. And though it may have been an imperfect choice, we can perhaps see a certain symbolism in it. So much of what was proclaimed on the Arch of Titus in Rome has been reversed, but not all. When the seal was adopted, ancient Jerusalem was closed to Jews. And today, when that is, thank God, no longer the case, the destruction of the temple still has not been undone, with much of the world disparaging the Jewish connection to the Temple Mount and the Jewish right to even access and worship atop it. Given all that has occurred in the past 7 decades, the providential destiny of the Jews seems difficult to doubt, yet so many Jews in the world still doubt it. And the prophetic prediction of an age in which the whole world recognizes the Jewish link to Jerusalem still has yet to be achieved. The emblem of the State of Israel marks a miracle in our age, the undoing of so much of that announced by the Arch of Titus. But the state's emblem's imperfections remind us to celebrate all that has been achieved, but also to continue to yearn for all that is yet to come. For me, standing in the ruins of ancient Rome as a Jew is one of the most remarkable religious experiences that one can have. To know that Rome had once established this arch as an advertisement for the defeat of the Jewish people and the Jewish faith, and for the triumph of the Flavius family, is to ponder today the miracle of Jewish eternity. But it is also inspiring to realize that Judaism endures today because of Jews who saw throughout the centuries the Arch of Titus, and who nevertheless had the courage and the astonishing will to continue to believe in the endurance of all that the original menorah of the temple embodied. So many Jews praying the words that exist in one version of the Jewish liturgy, Or Chadash al Tzion Ta'ir v'nizkechu lano b'mehera l'oro. May you cause a new light to shine on Zion, and may we soon merit to rejoice in its illuminance. This week we mark the miracles of Jerusalem Day, but we do so remembering the faith of the past and pondering miracles that are still yet to be. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.